Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us in Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Online, we're at kpcg.fm. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, hopefully you get good sleep because they say disrupted sleep could increase the risk of dementia. That's not a good thing. Also, why do leaders in Latin America keep getting in trouble for corruption? Seems like that happens quite a bit. Don't text your ex. There's a new booming industry of breakup experts. And they say we wouldn't celebrate a statue of Hitler, so why Engels? That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. Thanks for listening there. And you can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to at kpcgfm. Also, email us any comments you have, comments at kpcg.fm. A lot of nice comments came in recently. We appreciate those. Somebody sent you a comment, Grant, congratulated you on the birth of your daughter. So,
oh, great.
They liked the name, thought it was a good name choice. And yeah, a few other nice comments as well, just about the program on Friday, I guess it was. People enjoy a little bit of a chuckle, I guess, a little humor. So that's always a good thing. Grant and I were up in Chicago last few days. We had a personal appearance campaign by a Kiva David presenter and Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury. So we were up there helping with that, and that was great. Got to meet some people that listen to the program and to other programs here on the station. So people always come up and they say, well, you don't look like I thought you would. And I always said, are you disappointed? And they're like, well, no. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was funny. There were a few people who came up to me and said they enjoyed the show. And then I said, do you know the guy sitting in the center of the room operating a camera? That's Dwight Falk. He's the one in charge of the whole thing. You should go tell him. And they said, oh, I had no idea what he looked like. Thanks for pointing him out.
That's right. Try to keep it secret. Yeah.
So, I blew your cover there, though.
No, I know. I can't. Next time I'm going to have to wear one of those glasses and fake nose and mustache. That won't be inconspicuous.
Most of the comments I've gotten is saying, I have a face for radio.
Yeah. So. That's one of those underhanded compliments.
Yes.
Like, oh, thanks. Hey, wait a minute. What do you mean by that? Well, it's good to be back. Everything went well with that. I'm sure there'll be a lot more details. Trumpet Daily Radio Show, they talked about that a day or so ago. So lots of good info about that campaign. Lots of stories to talk about today, including this one. If you have a little bit extra money laying around, $2 billion or so, you might want to buy the Houston Rockets. They're for sale.
Okay.
The Houston Rockets are officially for sale. They say Leslie Alexander, he's the owner. He paid $85 million for the Rockets in July of 93. And now they value it at about $1.65 billion, and it's for sale. So that was a good investment for him if he can find a buyer.
If I bought them, I would just trade all their best players to the Thunder, purposely tank the Rockets.
That's funny. Yeah, that would be interesting to get in the mix and all that. They said that the owner, he's a little bit of an older fellow, and they just said he's tired. You know, I mean, it is a lot of work. You do hand over a lot of it to, you know, managers and general managers and things, but still – trying to put out a good product, it's you know, it would be a lot of pressure. It's probably something that you'd enjoy for a few years and then kind of get tired of it. So, but I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, he really should just try to delegate all of it. Just give all the responsibilities to people who have to choose which players are on the team and coach those players, and then basically your part of it is you can go to the game and sit wherever you want. That's exactly what I would do as well.
Yeah, I would like, I mean, I guess owning an NBA team would be great. I think, Abraham, you'd want to own a hockey team, I suppose.
Yeah.
And Grant, you'd probably be basketball too, right? You wouldn't want to own a football team, would you?
Well, I would actually love to own any of them.
Oh, okay.
I have a hard time even telling what my favorite sport is.
So you're going to need a lot of money.
I need each one.
It's hard to stay focused when you own all these different sports
different,
teams.
Like 15 different sports I would need to own.
That's what they should do. They should just have one guy come in and buy all the teams. And then he's like, I don't care who wins. You know? Trade to himself just to you know, make it fun, mix it up a little bit. It'd be terrible, but it'd be sort of interesting.
At least you'd always think your team has a legitimate chance of winning.
Yeah. Every time the draft rolls around, it's like, well, it doesn't matter. It's the same guy taking everybody. So.
Well, it is like, it's like the WWE. They script how things go, and people are still excited about it because they know that eventually you would think their favorite wrestler has to win.
Yeah, that's right. It's a, sort of like a suspended disbelief. You know, you go into people that like those things. They know it's fake, but they watch it anyway. And there's always a lot of theories out there that, or conspiracy theories that like the professional sports are rigged. You know, I don't think you can do. How would you keep it quiet? You know, nobody can keep anything quiet, and then like all these players would be in on it. I just don't think that's possible.
My grandmother from New York actually is strongly convinced that the NFL is rigged.
Yeah,
and I mean, I don't know, because why would you make the Bills so bad for so long and just put them in this pit of perpetual hopelessness? It doesn't seem like the best business model necessarily.
No, I mean, the only time I ever think it's a little weird is sometimes the officiating seems a little bit like going one way or the other, and so who knows about that? There's a lot of theories out there. Here's a neat story. A 101-year-old runner shatters the 100-meter dash record. Her name is Julia Hurricane Hawkins. She made history by completing the distance in 40.12 seconds in the USA Track and Field Masters Outdoor Championships at Louisiana State University. I don't know how old you have to be in that, like what the range would be, but, you know, if you were like 85 and you're like, there's no way I'm losing to that 101-year-old lady. You're like, well, that's the Hurricane, though. So she won it and survived, apparently. 40.12 seconds, a 100-meter dash. A little faster than I can do it.
Yeah, actually, on Sunday we had the track meet at the Philadelphia Youth Camp, and I was the announcer for it, unfortunately, but... it was fun though, because I got to stand right in the middle of the track and announce the winners, and we had several 100-meter dash events, and I think the average was between I think the fastest I saw was about 15 point something to a high 20s.
Yeah.
So I mean, these are youthful teenagers running that, and she's barely double that time. So I mean, that's really good.
Well,
for
I mean,
101
just the fact that she can sort of run. I mean, that's astounding at that age. And I imagine if you're watching on television, you can imagine the slow motion replay of the running. It's so slow to start with. It would just be like you would think it was a freeze frame. Like they froze it. No, that's actually they're running, but it's in slow motion.
5 seconds later, it moves like maybe half a millimeter.
So anyway, I didn't know they had these championships, but they do. It's the seniors, or it's the Masters Outdoor Championships. That would actually be a lot of fun. I would probably watch that if it was on television, just to see these older people perform. It'd be really fascinating.
Well, actually, one man working the camp in the kitchen, he's volunteering. He, before coming to the youth camp, he was in a strongman championship. He's 59 years old, and he was pulling the truck and doing all the strongman stuff. And it's impressive. He's a huge guy anyway, but... impressive that he trained for it and he did it at the age, and he came in first place in his age category.
Wow.
I think it was in St. Louis.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. Wow. Good for him. He should have come out there and thrown the stuff around with the kids.
Yeah.
Just be like, I'll show you how to throw the javelin. Throw it too far, I'll throw the track. I have to admit that I, over the weekend when we were staying at this hotel, I just flipped on the TV one night, ESPN, I flipped by there, and they were playing... video games. Like, it was a show where you watch people play video games, and it was huge. Like, there was tons of. Did you see that?
Wasn't it held in Las Vegas?
Yeah,
yeah. I was watching that.
They were playing. They were playing Street Fighter. I think that old game from back in the day. And they would announce these players. Most of them were like Japanese, and they would come out. And there were a few others, I guess, from American stuff. But they would come out, and it was kind of like, you know, they're showboating to the crowd and everything, and then they just sit down and play a video game. And I was commenting to another guy. I said, this is strangely captivating. Like, I should not be interested in this, but I kind of was. It was terrible.
It was smart of them to put such a simplistic video game as the center of the event.
Yeah.
Because everyone can understand, you're trying to finish off your opponent, like, you know, punching and kicking and then throwing a fireball occasionally.
Yeah.
And the announcers knew the name of every single power-up move and every single spinning kick.
Yeah.
They were experts in that video game, it seemed like.
I was mesmerized by the background of the game, because they have a couple of graphics that just keep repeating the action. And there's this bear sitting there, and he's just kind of like bouncing. I'm like, why is there a bear there? I have a lot of more questions than answers about these video games.
Yeah, actually, that's a huge industry. The the watching people play video games.
Yeah.
On YouTube, people make thousands of dollars a year just playing video games, uploading it, and people watching it. But also you have these huge tournaments for like Destiny, Street Fighter, World of Warcraft, basically any game you can think of. They sell out these huge stadiums. People come and they have like a team, and they have like the team t-shirt,
right,
and the memorabilia, and they're cheering them on, and they're watching on these big screens. And you have like commentators commentating like a sports event. And it's odd that so many people would be into just watching someone else play a video game. And that I mean, there's millions of dollars flowing around everywhere. It's just a really odd like subculture.
Yeah, this guy came out with his entourage. There's a bunch of young guys like him, and they were wearing matching outfits. And I thought, what is their function? Like, what do you do here?
The dweeb team.
Well, and then the one guy won. And they were interviewing him, and he's like, "I'm just so humbled, to win." And he's like, it's all about work ethic. I put in 16 hours a day. I'm like, playing this game? It's insanity to me.
The guy with the posse said that?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you think maybe he'd be humble enough to lose the posse then?
I don't know. It's just a whole nother world out there, and I just don't quite understand it. Do you know why they wear headphones when they do it?
Yes.
What are they listening to, the game or?
Yeah, the game, okay. But they can also talk to each other.
Yeah, a lot of those guys, they had the microphone attached to their headphones, but they didn't even have it up to their mouth.
Right.
They weren't talking any smack, probably because the stakes were too high and they didn't want to be embarrassed.
There are strange things in life where they shouldn't be interesting, but for some reason they are.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you think, this is ridiculous, but yet, for some reason, I find this to be interesting. Kind of like Live with Regis and Kelly, or whatever that show was.
Oh, yeah.
But now I don't know. It's like Ryan Seacrest or somebody.
Yeah. Is it Michael Strahan?
He left. He left. Now it's Ryan Seacrest and Kelly Ripa or something. Yeah. I don't know anything about that show. I've not seen it in years. Again, I happen to flip by it, and I'm like, wow, this is so strange, but yet captivating. I don't know why.
Well, especially when Michael Strahan was on it, he would say something, and everyone would like look at each other and smile, but it was like way off. But he's trying to say something clever. I mean,
didn't work.
He's a nice guy, but he's a football player. He's not a he hasn't been in the media and all that stuff for a long time.
Well, it's just a show primarily for ladies, I think.
Yeah,
because it's kind of about stuff that I think ladies would be more interested in, and me apparently.
Isn't it during the mid morning?
Yeah,
as well?
Right. Yeah. When most people aren't, at home watching TV. But anyway, when you're in a hotel and you're just kind of at odd hours, you're like, what is going on in this
that's
world?
It's so funny. We were in different hotel rooms watching the same thing. For after like 10 minutes, I'm like, wait a minute. What am I doing right now?
Yeah, it was fascinating.
Well, I did see a funny, when I was doing the research for those video game articles, I was trying to do serious research, but I kept coming across like people making fun of people who play video games. And with the Street Fighter, because it takes a lot of like your thumbs, I saw one that it was a joke making fun of people who are really good at it, who play in those tournaments, and it shows a guy playing it, and then a third hand comes and starts pressing the buttons, and that's how they win, is like they have three hands and three thumbs, and they're pressing everything.
Yeah, would that be an advantage if you had like an extra thumb?
Probably.
Like just genetically, you'd be the chosen one.
Yeah.
Well, it was astounding how skilled those players were, because there'd be one guy throwing out all the attacks he could possibly think of, and just split seconds later, the other guy was blocking every single attack. And then as soon as that guy would overextend his attack, the other guy would hit him with like 10 power-up moves in a row. This totally took advantage of the tiniest window of opening.
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe how they could get that good at a game.
I wonder if they ever just stop and think to themselves during quiet moments, like, what am I doing? And then they're like, wow, I'm just going to spend all my money I made.
Well, exactly. They're getting rich. I don't think they even care that much about it.
No, it's a really, I always think like years later when society as we know it's much, much different, and you try to explain what things used to be like to people, and they say, now, what did you do? You're like, well, I played this game and people watched me. And I don't think people are going to comprehend it. They're like, why? Like, what? There's a lot of things like that. It's amazing. Some other headlines to talk about today, though we could go on and on about Street Fighter. Reuters says that there's a setback for President Trump's agenda leaves dollar stranded. The dollar fell to a 10-month low on Tuesday, bearing the brunt of a sell-off triggered by another setback, they say, to U.S. President Donald Trump's agenda and scaled back expectations for another rate hike at Federal Reserve this year. The announcement overnight that two Republican senators would not support the latest version of the health care bill had led to speculation that the reform proposal was likely to be withdrawn, so that healthcare thing is sort of hanging in the balance. And it fed into a belief that Trump's tax cuts and spending plans will come to naught. So that the dollar is, I guess, somewhat, like they say, at a 10-month low. It bounces around, but and that's another write-up saying I think Congress was most unproductive in over 100 years. It's no one can agree on anything, and it seems like I don't even know what the point of any of it is in a lot of ways. Like, if you're just going to go in, not agree on anything, and do nothing, what's the point? I don't understand.
They are just completely divided along partisan lines. It's uniformly every Democrat will resist whatever the movement is in Congress. Yeah. And what they could be doing is suggesting some ideas and trying to improve the legislation that's being worked on. But obviously right now they're getting big political points from their constituents for just resisting the president in any way they can.
Yeah, there's no way you'd want to support him, because you'd be called, if you're a Democrat, because you'd be called out for it, and you'd probably lose. Yeah. And so everybody, I think, knows, but people aren't really looking at the good of the country on any level. They're looking after their own political careers. Those two things aren't going to work well together. Related to that, this is from Bloomberg, talking about these polls they always put out. They say, for a president who, with historically low poll numbers, Donald Trump can at least find solace in this. Hillary Clinton is still lower than him in the polls. So even though he's apparently pretty low, she's even lower. People said they didn't care for her. However, former President Barack Obama has a very high rating right now, as well as Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden. It makes me wonder if a lot of these polls are just media echo chambers. They sit there and they tell you something. You should think this way. You should think this way. You should think this way. Hey, how do you think about this? And then people say, yeah, we think like you think. And they say, hey, what do you know? Like, is that realistic? Now, they call the 1,001 people, and they're basing their poll off of that. They keep talking about historically low numbers. Maybe they are. I don't know. But isn't it just because the media is on them all the time? Isn't that the main reason?
Well, I think they never really release where the 1,000 people are because you do, I think when they do polls, they try to get each demographic in different places. I don't know exactly how they conduct the polls, but
yeah, in this case, there's a telephone poll of 1,001 American adults. There's a plus minus error margin of like 3.1%. It was conducted July 8th through the 12th by this Iowa-based Selster and Company. So they're calling 1,001 people. Again, we don't know who they called. They base their numbers off of this. And, you know, but again, it would depend on who you called. and even there, you know, you remember during the election season, Donald Trump polled pretty low because people weren't admitting that they were going to vote for him because they knew it wasn't the popular thing, and then they'd voted for him. And that's, I think, one of the things that threw everybody off. Because he didn't poll high, but then people did support him. So, because I heard this on the news all day yesterday, historically low polls and all this. But it just seems to me like it's just the echo coming back from what the media is saying.
There was a guy last night I talked to in Chicago, and he said he voted for Mr. Trump, but he wouldn't tell anyone ever because he's sure he would lose his job just the way that some of the people at his job are so outspoken against him.
Wow. Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of people like that that would keep their politics quiet, which is smart. You start talking about it at work or something like that, and you can get into hot water with people. And everybody knows the popular pressure is anti-Trump, you know. So anyway, poor Miss Clinton, she just can't. Even though the media tried to get behind her, she just, like, they, in this write-up here, I don't want to say like it's my opinion, it's just what this guy said, but they interviewed a few people and they were just like, yeah, we don't like her, we don't trust her. So that people just had that feeling about her,
and that's what even the most hardline Democrats will say. Even if they despise Mr. Trump, they'll say they're probably even more mad at their own party for putting out such an unpalatable candidate.
Yeah.
Mrs. Clinton had so many areas that she could have been exposed on with the emails and Benghazi. There's so many other things you could just list forever. And so what do they really expect to happen in the midst of a presidential election? That's what always happens. There's mudslinging. People dig up every juicy bit of gossip they can find. And it's not even like you had to dig to find hers.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you do have to be somewhat likable, at least among some people. And if you're not, I don't know how you change that. Like, it's a hard thing. So she had such a long history in politics that You know, when President Obama burst on the scene, he was kind of this, you know, like, where did this guy come from? There wasn't a lot you could look back on. Well, you could, but people didn't care to dig around. But he didn't have much of a political record. You know, he voted present.
Right.
Things like that to where he couldn't really go after him. And she had such a long history with her husband and everything that maybe you just can't overcome that mold you're already in.
Well, plus with polls, I think the American people vacillate a lot. And it's not necessarily a reflection of the people, but how they poll, because the president with the lowest rating ever in history is Harry Truman. After he fired General MacArthur, his polling went down to just above 10% approval rating.
Wow.
But at historic low, MacArthur returned. He was a front runner for president for a while. But people didn't elect him. They elected Dwight Eisenhower instead because MacArthur made lots of mistakes, and I don't think he would have been a good president anyway. But it didn't necessarily matter what the poll said. People reacted that way because MacArthur was a hero because of Korea, all these things going on. But in the long term, it looks much different. And so these polls are just a little short-term snippet of what some people are thinking. But if you look on the long term, especially when you look now at Harry Truman, he's top six presidents of all time, usually. Most people put him there. So, I mean, and a lot of people thought that way at the time. They just weren't polled.
Right.
So it is, these polls are very short-sighted. But if you look at the long term, usually they come back to show the opposite a lot of times.
Yeah, historically, that's very true. Even if you just look at, say, like what some columnists would write about, like, say, Theodore Roosevelt when he would lose, or you know, they'd say they'd have some really negative things to say. But you read it now and you think historically, like, well, he's considered to be a really good president. But at the time, people had a different perspective. So history does kind of bear out, I think, probably the truth of these things. Here's the world's changing, right? So new technology, new situations, new industries pop up. Here's one that some people are getting into and doing pretty well at. It's from The Guardian. They say, don't text your ex. Inside the booming industry of breakup experts, they'll handle your breakup for you. You don't have to do it yourself anymore. Oh. Or I guess if somebody breaks up with you, they're going to help you through the process. It's not cheap. Over 6 months, this one individual paid this lady who's doing this job, and there's several doing it, $2,500 to help him break up. Wow. She encouraged him to start working out, build a new social circle, and study mindfulness. The guy says, Natalia, the lady, encouraged me to grieve my relationship and to allow myself to feel my feelings. That's always good advice. Feel your feelings. $2,500, please.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Seinfeld when Jerry breaks up with one of his girlfriends and he starts crying. He's like, what's the salty discharge?
Yes.
Like, I actually care. Because because it's just making fun of the what was happening a lot then and even more now is people have like a revolving door in relationships a lot of the time.
Right, and that's a big part of this write-up too, is it's not just the technology changing, it's the fact that people are not getting married and they're just going from one relationship to another, so it all factors in.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you have relationship after relationship that doesn't work, it can be very difficult to deal with, and probably a lot of emotions there that
sure.
that just build up over time. So they do need help. I'm not sure if I'm sure these people can help them, but there's obviously something else going on that needs to be addressed that the experts can't address in that way.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. This is exactly, it's the same sort of thinking that you see in a lot of things. You could say like the medical profession or something, where instead of stopping and saying, okay, what is causing all of, like in this case, these breakups, they just say, well, let's just manage people through them. You know, it's like trying to deal with the effect and then not worry about the cause. I mean, what difference does it make if you go through this process and you just keep going through it over and over again and spending all your money? It's an industry that doesn't need to exist probably, but it does exist only because people aren't looking at the cause of their heartache and their problems. And which in most cases is a lifestyle choice. Not in every, there would be, you know, some exceptions. But usually at least one person's making a lifestyle decision that's not great. Because we're not talking about, hey, you went on two dates and it didn't work out. I mean, we're talking about these people are heavily involved, but they're not married.
Right. That's a big issue, is promiscuity. It's called the hookup culture now, where you meet someone at a bar and you just go from there, and you don't even really know the other person's name. That's just glorified now, like it could actually work and become something more. Really, how do you do that if there's no foundation, if you don't even know what the person's goals and dreams are, and you're already sexually involved? That's a pretty destructive foundation to a relationship.
Yeah. And I guess, and you know, this also, this industry trying to help people through these problems, it does highlight the reality that when you get involved heavily with somebody, there is an emotional issue.
Yeah.
It's not no big deal. It does take a toll.
Especially for the girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
This lady, that one of the ladies doing this, these sessions, she'll do her therapy sessions over email and Skype. We couldn't even meet face to face. By the way, a lot of these examples are from Canada, Abraham.
Oh,
not surprised.
Just FYI. So this lady, they say, has become kind of a one-stop shop for the brokenhearted. In addition to breakup coaching, which includes 24-hour social media support, the lady guides clients through a post-breakup home cleanse. She works as an intermediary when it comes to the painful exchange of once-shared goods. And will even help clients secure transitional housing. So these people obviously were, you know, cohabitating. And so they have to do all these things. So she's going to help you through that for a fee. But you can do other things, too. They say if you'd rather use an app to get over your ex, you can get Mend. That's a new app that's out there. I thought it was just for sewing your socks. Apparently it's not. Mend is your personal trainer for heartbreak, it says. It sends you upbeat and supportive daily prompts. That would drive me crazy. You're having a bad day, and it's like, hey, buddy. You know, oh, man, don't send me that stuff.
Yeah, I think we should make a demotivational app. It's a unmend or mend or I don't know.
What torn.
Yeah.
Ripped asunder. Yeah, I kind of have that even. I don't have this app, but I just my phone's got like the, you know, it'll track your walking, track all these things. And if it feels like I haven't done enough that day, it tells me, like, don't give up. Each step is a step closer to a better you. I'm like, would you leave me alone? I just didn't happen to have the phone in my pocket when I walked somewhere. You don't know what's going on. So I get that even on my phone. But this Mend app, it sends upbeat and supportive daily prompts in the form of an attractive female avatar. Oh, thank you. Mend will ask you how you're doing and then provide some helpful tips on why you might have trouble sleeping or eating and what you can do better. It sends users relevant articles, explains the science behind how you're feeling, and encourages you to journal your thoughts. So wow. It seems like it's just a whole industry based on trying to deal with problems that don't need to happen in the first place.
Yeah, I think even when people do get seriously attached to each other, and there even is a little bit of depth there, because they haven't made the full commitment of getting married, it's almost like, well, any given day, you're not locked in, and so why not move on whenever you get bored? It's just a little bit too easy to detach from that and probably break the other person's heart in the process.
Yeah, it's a really bad deal. So, but they there's one thing they say you shouldn't do, and I've never really considered this because I'm just not in this situation, but they say don't look up your former partner's social media updates. I was thinking about that. You know, I mean, if even if it's just a dating situation or something, and it just didn't work out, you know, a lot of times you don't see the person, or you know, you don't really know what's going on. But now with social media, you know everything that's going on, and of course, everybody's trying to make their life look great, right? I thought, well, that would be really hard to take, because especially if you're the one that didn't want to break up, and then you look on their social media and they're like, never had a better weekend, you know, it would be driving you crazy.
Yeah, it is. I haven't experienced this personally, but friends have talked about a lot and different things throughout my extensive career as a single person. They would, it's constantly burning at them. It's filling their mind all the time. And my friends and I just tell them, like, hey, just move on. Like, but anyway. But that does, I don't want to get into the story where I was going, but
that'll be on the after hours edition of. No,
yes.
I'm kidding. Good.
But it's true. It's social media is like a window into someone's life, and it keeps resurrecting things when you just need to get over it, move on, if you're in that situation, or avoid it altogether.
Yeah. It's like somebody coming up to you constantly and being like, hey, did you see so-and-so? They are doing great.
Yeah.
it's a whole new industry that's out there, and people are making money at it, being breakup experts. So kind of interesting, just because of our changing culture. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm, and we have a live link at thetrumpet.com. Key David program's coming up. Trumpet Daily Radio Show as well. And stop and check out thetrumpet.com. Headlines today, do mothers hurt the economy? And also related to that, why is America's middle class shrinking? That means not our waistlines, but the number of them, I guess. I put myself in there. Nationalizing the family as well. Those are headlines at thetrumpet.com. Grant, we get a couple of stories, but before we get into it, you've got one here that's pretty interesting. You guys have been to Whataburger, I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whataburger. Delicious. And one time we were driving back from someplace, and we stopped at a Whataburger, and it's a pretty big hamburger, right? So we ate it, and we were totally full. And then every time we'd pass another one, I'd always say to my wife, you want to stop and get another Whataburger? she did not want to see one for probably ever for the rest of her life. Like, you want another one? It's just right there. She did not, by the way. There's a problem for Whataburger, especially in Texas. People are stealing their order signs. When you go there and you get an order, they give you a number, and people are stealing them, apparently. This is an issue.
Yeah, that's one of the funniest problems I've ever read about. I couldn't stop laughing while reading this article. They are stealing, so that's not a good thing. But that recently, Whataburger changed their order signs to these plastic table tents, and they have the orange and white stripes just like the building of Whataburger itself has, and like the paper bags have. And so now they've been seen as collector's items.
Yeah.
And it's an epidemic, at least there in Texas. People just steal these things constantly, especially if it's one of their favorite numbers. There's one person who tries to steal every single number that starts with an 8 or has an 8 in it at all, which is quite a lot. You know, you got 8, 18, 28, and then you get into the 80s and you have to take every single one of those.
Yeah, this write-up says, if a Whataburger employee doesn't ask for the table tent when delivering an order, it's as good as gone, says Marlena Jordan, a 21-year-old from Denton, Texas, who says she has roughly 80 Whataburger tents at home. Some of them gifts from friends. And so there's some that are selling. I'm not going to get into it because it's a little, it's not appropriate. But in any event, particular numbers are selling for very high dollar amounts, including up to $2,000 on eBay. So if people have a particular number they're looking for, if you sell it on eBay, though, they could find you. Like, where'd you get that from? But I guess it's not worth going after. It's not. Would you gonna prosecute everybody? So, anyway, who would have thought? People get all kinds of things.
I do have a really funny story that I can tell. And I'm not proud of this, but it happened. My friends and I, when I was in high school, we went to McDonald's and we just got some food and we were sitting there eating and we came in my friend's car, so we all had to leave in his car. And he was just looking around. He's getting bored, I guess, and he saw this sign on, like, the big McDonald's sign with the suction cups on the window. And he's looked at it, and he, like, pulled one off, and he's like, huh. And he, like, tore the whole thing off and ran out of the room. Oh. And we're like, what? So we all get up and leave and get in his car, and he drives off. So he's like, man, what are we going to do with this McDonald's sign? I'm like, well, you shouldn't have stolen it in the first place. But anyway, we drove up, and they put it over top of a Burger King drive-thru menu. So when they pull up, it's just like this big McDonald's sign over top of it. But anyway, like I'm not proud of what happened and everything, but it is really funny, like what happened, I guess. But yeah, this people, they just walk into a store and they think they can just take whatever they want. It's just a weird.
And that thing is worthless, and so are those little order tents. I mean, I guess it's a souvenir if you're really proud of the restaurant. But the reason police got involved was during a lot of routine traffic stops, they were always seeing these things on the dashboard of people's cars, like all over the place. And they said, well, these aren't for sale. So how are they always getting these?
Right.
And sometimes the police will just try to make an example of them and force them to return it to a specific store. And apparently, Whataburger's in 10 states and they have 815 stores. And yet every year they have to order like 1.2 million more signs because they're just being stolen all the time. And people even have specific methods for stealing them. Usually a server will come to the table and look for the sign that has your number on it and then drop off the food. But what you can do is hide the number in your back pocket and pretend you never got an order, and they'll just call out the number anyway if they don't see your number.
Yeah.
And some people are even so brazen as to look a server in the eye while they put it away for themselves, while they take the number.
Well, right. I mean, if you're just your teenager or whoever you are and you're working your summer job and this big guy just like, you know what, I'm taking this. You're
not
like,
worth
okay, sir. Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? I'll fight you for that Whataburger sign, you know? Yeah, wow. It's one of those just bizarre things people get into. That is so strange. A lot of people are big fans of particular fast food restaurants and things. They're selling a new thing, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken's trying all these things with the Colonels, Colonel Sanders. You can now buy a pillow where it like the side of Colonel Sanders' head, like looking at you. So when the person sleeps, so you look at it, so it looks like you and Colonel Sanders are right there. That's an actual, I saw it. I'm like, wow, people are buying these things.
It's creepy.
It is creepy.
That is dedication to fried chicken right there.
It smells like chicken. Yeah. So I don't know. That's strange, strange stuff going on. It's funny. No matter what situation is out there, somebody's going to figure out a way to like do something wrong, like yeah. take something. Just bizarre, bizarre things.
That never crossed my mind to steal one of those table tents. And yet I could see a lot of people reading that and being like, oh, yeah, that would be a cool souvenir. So maybe the Wall Street Journal is inciting people to steal more.
Well, right. Yeah, that is true. When it is highlighted, I guess people think about it. And yeah, I could see high school kids doing it for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a couple other stories here for us, Grant. It says, this is from the Federalist, unable to confront the migrant crisis, of course, big deal over there in Europe. They say Europe is committing suicide. As Europe's migrant crisis enters a new phase, it's clear that European leaders have neither the will nor desire to preserve their own civilization. So we've seen this going on for really a couple of years, several years now. On some level, they want to be inclusive, but another level, you're letting in people that have a very different civilization than you do in a lot of ways.
Yes, on Sunday, German Chancellor Angela Merkel actually proclaimed that she still would not limit the number of refugees coming into the country. It's just to the point where you wonder, what does it take for a leader to actually do something that benefits their own people?
That is amazing. Just even practically speaking, at some point, you have to limit the number. You can be the nicest person in the world, but if you only have a four-bedroom house, at some point, you couldn't let people just come in there because you don't have any more space. Mm-hmm. Germany's not a massive country.
Right. Well, then this article actually brings out as well just the reaction to President Trump's speech in Poland and how he talked about preserving Western civilization. You look at the meltdown from the media and European elites, and it really makes you think maybe they're not so proud of the values of free speech and equal rights and, all of these other different aspects of society that are so much better in the West than they are in the rest of the world. What this does highlight is that a lot of people legitimately think that all civilizations are the same. All peoples want the exact same things and will treat each other the same way. That has been proven false by this migrant crisis, where a lot of young men from Afghanistan and Syria and other countries have been taking advantage of women that they see on the streets.
Yeah, that's happened over there. And it kind of gets back, I think, to this false idea, and we see it a lot of times in the U.S. too, that it's just about opportunity. If you have an opportunity for a good education, you'll obviously go to school and really buckle down and get a great job. So if you're somebody that's, or if it's a particular area and there's a lot of crime and a lot of violence, well, it's just because they don't have good schools.
Right.
Well, they've tried those things. It's more than that. And in this case, we're talking about different societal values. So this is even a much, much bigger difference. And just because they come into Europe, they're not going to become European. That's been proven. So then the question is, are you content to like sort of coexist, or do you become Muslim? Because a lot of the teachings of the Muslim world is that their goal is to make everybody Muslim. Did they stop doing that now? Is that over? It doesn't appear to be.
Right. And then it's also true that Europe has always been willing to compromise on these other values of the West. They've been willing to compromise on freedom of speech and religion and the democratic rule of law. But the one thing that they have never, until recently, been willing to compromise on is equal rights. They even have certain commissions designed to try to force women out of the home and into the workforce. So they think that women are so equal that they shouldn't be allowed to choose their career path. That's what it amounts to. They don't think that women should limit themselves in the home. But then when you see, so basically they're more extreme in feminism than the U.S. even is, just by trying to require that they leave the home. So they think of themselves as just the paragon of defending women. It doesn't bear out that way, though, when you have these people from the Middle East coming in and abusing women, and you have the Rotherham child sex trafficking ring that the police knew about but didn't want to break up because they didn't want to be called racist. They're clearly not the defenders of women that they like to think of themselves as when it comes to these migrants, at least.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, even if you think about Angela Merkel, obviously is a woman.
Yeah.
She could not do anything like what she's doing in Germany in terms of leadership. She could not do that in an Islamic country. That would never happen. And yet, so, I mean, she knows that. Mm-hmm. And so, and she obviously values a woman's right in her country to be in the highest position. That couldn't happen in the culture that they're inviting in. So I just don't understand, like, how they reconcile these differences in their minds and think that they can coexist.
It is absolute insanity. Clearly, the civilizations are different. A lot of these Middle Eastern countries are stuck 500 years in the past. They used to be some of the most prosperous societies in the entire world. They own some of the most vital ports, and so they were able to trade a lot of wealth. But they haven't really gotten out of the 1500s in a lot of cases. Those are really the last nations in the world that anyone would choose to move to. I mean, especially if you look at Syria, but even Iran and a lot of the North African nations as well. There is a problem there, and yet they think that these people will just immediately blend in as soon as they come to Europe. They might realize that it's unsafe for them in the Middle East and North Africa, but they're not willing, those migrants are not willing to take on European values just because they want to leave their homeland.
Yeah, it's not going to last forever, this, I don't know what you'd call it. It's not really a peace, but this uneasy stalemate to some extent. There's a lot at thetrumpet.com about what you can expect to see happen over there in Europe, and they're not going to withstand this forever, not going to allow this forever. But that this writes from the Federalist, unable to confront the migrant crisis. Europe is committing suicide. They will confront it at some point. We're going to have to skip a couple just because... we are zipping through today's hour.
That's right.
I want to mention, Abraham, before we get into one of yours here, we talked a little bit about Dunkirk, that movie that's coming out. I don't know if it's going to be great or not or whatever, but headlines are good about it. They say Dunkirk is hailed as a masterpiece. It's the best movie of 2017, and the critics are raving. So don't know. Have not seen it. And obviously it's going to be violent, I guess, because of the war aspect. But... interesting. It's always interesting when a historical movie is liked by the critics. I don't know about the accuracy or anything like that, but so far people that say it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, from what I've seen too, a lot of good reviews on the cinematography. It looks very realistic. And the way they wrote the story is very compelling. It follows three different men throughout the activities. I have heard a couple complaints, mainly by British Navy historians, that the Navy doesn't have a prominent enough role in the movie. It kind of makes the Air Force and the Army look good, but doesn't show much like the Navy. I don't know if that's true. I haven't been able to see it, of course, but it'll be interesting to see. I think in any event, it doesn't seek to revise history. It's just trying to tell a story, and usually that's when the movies are best. They're just trying to be honest about it. So. I think it'll probably be the best war movie in a while.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. The thing I always dislike about, and I don't see a ton of movies, I basically see kids' movies because my kids want to see, but I hate it when they try to bring in like social agendas and things like that into it. It has nothing to do with the story, and all of a sudden, whoops, what's going on here? So I hope they don't try to pull in something like that. You always get a character with like modern societal issues that you probably wouldn't have seen, you know. So hopefully there's none of that, but it seems like those things always pop up in movies, and especially kids' movies. It's really irritating because you think it's going to be fine, and you look at the ratings and the reviews, and then as you're watching it, you're like, oh, I see what they're doing here. That's right. Really irritating.
Well, sometimes it's not even the director's or the writer's goal. There are some very powerful lobbies in Hollywood. They're connected to very high political offices, and basically they force the screenwriters to put in those things because they basically are trying to make a system where each movie has to have a certain representative portion from different communities. So like LGBT community,
sure.
All those things have to be represented in every movie. It doesn't matter what the movie is. And so they're gaining a lot of traction. So those themes you see are mainly from the lobbies. They don't necessarily represent what the screenwriter wanted.
Yeah. You've got another right up here that we'll maybe we'll just have to hit on tomorrow about the disrupted sleep. And it could cause dementia if we remember to do it. This one's from the internet. It's a terrible disease. I don't mean to make fun of it at all, but it is easy to forget things. The International Business Times has a right up here. It says, we wouldn't celebrate a statue of Hitler, so why Engels? They say Nazism killed 17 million people, communism 100 million. Engels, who's that?
Yeah, so Frederick Engels, he's the lesser known co-author of the Communist Manifesto. So he worked very closely with Karl Marx. Engels is also a very prominent German philosopher. A lot of German legal theory and philosophy comes from Engels. But he was a communist through and through. And so in Manchester, they erected this big statue of Frederick Engels there. You can go online and see the big statue of it. And Daniel Hannan wrote this. He's a British MEP for South East England. But he's also a historian. And he's saying that people would be outraged, rightly so, if we put up a statue of Hitler. Because he represents everything evil. From that time period, but why are we putting up a statue of Engels? He is basically the second biggest symbol of communism, and as he pointed out, communism has killed at least 100 million. It's probably a lot more than that, I think, if you take in the grand scheme of it all. Hitler never killed anyone personally. Engels never did, but the philosophies they created have. Through history. So why do we judge them differently? And so he does bring up an interesting point that Nazism and Hitler, they're seen as the scourge of the earth, but communism isn't held to the same standard, where the real life trial and error of its implementation is disconnected from the theory, even though they're the same thing. The theory causes the real life situations. And so he's just pointing out people like Engels and Marx, people who are really held up as basically saviors in a lot of liberal institutions, they might not admit it, but their ideas are, they should be treated to the same standard, to where anywhere communism has come has been a scourge. It's killed people, it's caused probably the worst regime after Hitler in all of world history.
Yeah, and I think the reason it's such a... marked difference between the two in people's minds is, I think with Hitler, you have the concentration camps, and everybody saw that, and it was obviously in everybody's could see it. Communism, it killed so many people, but it kind of did it in a secretive way, or in a way the world didn't see quite as horrifically. Prime example, even when they didn't necessarily intend to, just the fact that the communism is a terrible system and it doesn't care about anybody kills people. I was reading a little bit of a book about the Chernobyl disaster. So they're giving you a brief history of the development of nuclear power in the U.S. and in Russia. And in the U.S., they figured things out pretty quickly and realized better ways to do things versus unsafe, and they did it the better way. Russia doesn't care. Communism doesn't care. We'll do it cheaper. So they build these nuclear power stations cheaply. Ineffectively, even the guy that was put over to it, not Chernobyl, but before that, back years before, he needed supplies. He needed parts. Well, it's communism. You're not going to get them. They don't show up. You ordered so much concrete, half it didn't show up. Where is it? Who knows? Right? Because that's just the system. So they're supposed to build these reactors to where there is a particular type of metal that is, you know, enveloping everything to protect it. Well, they don't want to do it. That's too expensive. So they put the protective metal piece on the top, and on the bottom, the rest of it's concrete. Well, that's not going to work, okay? So when the things blow sky high, which they did for other reasons as well, because of bad technology, they knew better, but they didn't care, it radiates an entire town. And not only that, they're dumping their waste in the rivers, and people live there. They don't care. Some of those lakes and rivers are so polluted that even to this day, I think if you stand on the shores, you're pretty much radiated. That's how bad it is. They don't care. They kept it a secret from everybody in the world, except for I think the CIA knew. And the people that lived close to these nuclear facilities, they had to remain secret. They called them atomic cities. They didn't want anybody to know what they were doing. Those people got radiated, and then they clean it up, and then 10 years later, they get radiated again, the offspring or whatever. And nobody cares. They do not care. And so that's so many killed. They don't even know how many people have died there because they don't have the numbers on it. And because Russia did not want to tell people that they were doing these things, when people came to the doctors and said, you know, I'm dying here, they said, oh, you have the special sickness. They couldn't even call it what it was. They said, oh, you have the special sickness. Well, the whole town had the special sickness. So when you talk about how many people that ideology has killed, yeah, we can think of like the Gulag, or we can think of wars. Just the way they destroyed their own people and didn't care because of just the communist system. But people don't know about that. It's not as in your face as the concentration camp.
So add to the body count of 100 million.
Yeah, absolutely.
The numbers and the generations of people who have been permanently maimed and disfigured
right.
from those fallouts.
Absolutely, because it's not just the people that died right away or shortly thereafter. It was their offspring. And the government said, well, too bad. And they knew. They all knew that they were doing it wrong. And they said, well, you know what, though? We won't make any mistakes. Well, you're going to make mistakes. Whereas in the U.S., they built in for human error. And that's what saved us from having a few meltdowns that could have been worse, like Three Mile Island, things like that.
Yeah, that's a perfect story to illustrate everything wrong with communist system as it's implemented in the real world. In ideology, that's supposed not to happen. But the ideology is false because that always happens. And this is what Daniel Hannan writes about communist regimes. He says, in fact, every Marxist regime ends up being homicidal. Tens of millions died in the Soviet Union and China. Well, it's probably closer to 100 million. There were torture chambers, labor camps, firing squads in every communist country, from Cuba to Vietnam, from Albania to North Korea. We're just talking about the Soviet Union. But if you look at every communist regime in the world, they've all been the center of repression, evil, just the worst kinds of human behavior possible. And so all these sins, if we can call that, or crimes against humanity, can be laid at the feet of the founders, I think. They didn't necessarily intend for that to happen, but it did. And so there are some consequences for that, just like all the problems of Nazism are laid at Hitler's feet. If we're going to have the same standard, then we need to apply it the same way. And so Marx and Engels, they never set foot in the factory. They had no idea how the working class functioned. And so they wrote this theory, and who has suffered the worst? It's the working class, who have been annihilated through history. And so for a Western country, especially England, the place that invented parliamentary democracy, for them to erect a statue of Engels instead of some other great hero or thinker on democracy shows how deluded and ignorant our societies are and how dangerous it is. Because if our education system worships Engels, then what's going to happen to our societies? They're probably going to end up looking more like the Soviet Union than what they're supposed to. And that, well, as Daniel Hannan says, they all end up becoming homicidal. And so it's a terrible foreboding of our future. But, and it all is really based around ignorance. And but also, I think a lot of the problems should also be laid at the feet of the educators who know these things, but they don't teach it, or they change it to make the West look evil and these communist ideologies to look good, when in practice they only bring suffering.
Well, yeah, and I haven't sat in any big class that's, you know, been pro-communism, at least. Yeah, maybe some of their thinking was, but they didn't talk about it. It was just different classes in college. But it seems like, and I could be wrong on this, but it seems like when people try to promote communism, they don't really talk about what it is. They just say, oh, we don't like the West. 1%, everybody's making all the money. But they don't really talk about what their alternative is. And why don't you take a look at the alternative and see which one's better? You know, if you are an intelligent student, you should be able to weigh it and say, well, which is a better decision? What would you rather live? Would you rather live in one of Russia's atomic cities where you get radiated and nobody cared and they said you have the special sickness? Or would you rather live in a city in the U.S. where you could have a voice and say, I don't like this pollution. We need to change this. I would rather live in a Western city.
Well, Abraham, you made a great point about how Marx had never even stepped foot in a factory, and yet he wrote like he was the absolute authority on helping those same exact people. That's what you see in a lot of these ideologies. They have this utopian vision in their minds, but they don't even think about the possible consequences. They don't realize that human nature leads to absolute power corrupting absolutely. What person, given the reins and unlimited authority over a country, is not going to abuse that completely? A carnal human being is going to do that every single time, and that's why every single communist state is just horrendous.
Yeah, well, that's a great point. And I think at the very foundation of it is that communism was created to be anti-God. Karl Marx himself said, my goal is to dethrone God. Mm-hmm. And so communism, they're always atheist states for the most part, or they have some kind of cultish worship of the leader. But they try to destroy religion because religious values prevent you from doing the things that they want to do.
Right,
because in Soviet Union, all the things they did, in the West, we have religious values that, for the most part, that people know about that would be a kind of a check and balance against that. They're not perfect, and today are very corrupted. But we have that kind of that biblical foundation in our societies that that have some morals there that prevent people from trying to do evil, or at least it's frowned upon, it's looked down upon, and punished for the most part. Not so much anymore. But in communism, it completely divorces religion from the state, so the state can do whatever it wants, and there's no punishment for doing evil.
It's really interesting. We wouldn't celebrate a statue of Hitler, so why Engels? That's a write-up from the International Business Times. Those are really interesting discussions. We need to have two-hour shows. But, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure this is for the Key of David program and Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau, enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.